Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, July 12th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from the bariatric program at Adirondack Health. Saranac Lake offering weight loss surgery and lifestyle education. Better health, better lives. AdirondackHealth.org. Joining us for Medical Monday is Dr. Paul Kreienberg of Albany Medical Center. He is here to discuss vascular surgery. Get your calls in early for this one. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Paul Kreienberg, vascular surgery. Your calls coming up on Medical Monday, right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Here on this Medical Monday to discuss vascular surgery is Dr. Paul Kreienberg of Albany Medical Center. Dr. Paul Kreienberg specializes in arterial insufficiency, aortic aneurysms, peripheral arterial bypass, carotid artery disease, lymphatic operative and non-operative therapies, among many other subjects. If you want to be a part of the conversation, give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org if you have a question. But the number, that's the easiest way, 800-348-2551. Dr. Paul Kreienberg, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Really nice to have you on the program today. For those who don't actually know what a vascular surgeon does, and I think vascular surgery is one of those things that you don't really know too much about it until you need one. What do you do on a daily basis?
So our job is basically taking care of all the blood vessels outside the heart and the brain. So the blood vessels on the heart are taken care of by cardiac surgeons. Blood vessels in the brain are taken care of by neurosurgeons. So we're kind of responsible for everything just beyond the great vessels in the heart, all the arteries going out to the feet, all the veins coming back, getting the blood back to the heart. We also do some lymphatic work. And then there's some other things that we do also take care of, which is access for hemodialysis, thoracic outlet, things like that.
What is thoracic outlet? I've heard so many ball players lately who have had surgery for thoracic outlet syndrome.
Yeah, so usually what it means is there's some compression. It can come in different varieties. It can be venous, arterial, or neurologic. The neurologic one is the most common one, and that's where the nerves that travel out to the arm from the neck get pinched either between one of the muscles in the neck or between the first rib and the clavicle. And then sometimes the vein can get compressed in there, and that's between the first rib and clavicle. So sometimes we have to open up that vein and then take the rib out to make more room to fix the problem. But it's a pretty common thing.
We're joined today by Dr. Paul Kreienberg of Albany Medical Center at Albany Medical College, and you do some supervisory work over there of the students as well, too.
Yeah, right? So we run two training programs for vascular surgery. There's two ways, training paradigms in which you can become a vascular surgeon. One is after doing your 4 years of medical school, you do 5 years of training in vascular surgery and then can become board certified in vascular surgery. The other option is to do your medical school time, do 5 years of a general surgery training program, and then we also have a 2-year fellowship we run. So that takes 7 years, and they become a vascular surgeon after that.
Our number to call, by the way, if you have a question about vascular surgery, is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, and we'll begin getting to your calls momentarily. You said something in our original discussion here about what vascular surgeons do that caught my attention. You said, well, we don't really do anything inside the heart or the brain. The brain, I get. I understand. But yeah, it seems to me that the heart should be a walk in the park for a vascular surgeon.
Well,
is it a union thing?
Well, it's a little different in terms of the techniques that are used. There's in terms of the way the surgery is done. I mean, the cardiac surgeons basically are more in tune to the anatomy of the heart and the blood vessels on the heart. The surgical approaches are different. And also the surgery they do requires putting people on bypass, which is something that vascular surgeons don't do. That's
really
part of their credentialing. Yeah. But there's a lot of overlap in our specialties. So often we work together on a lot of the larger cases where there's some crossover where the diseases are in the arteries.
What's the toughest challenge you have as a surgeon that you see regularly?
I think the And I, you know, I have a partner that's kind of specialized in this and works with the cardiac surgeons a lot. But a lot of the aneurysmal disease that involves both the artery coming right out of the heart and where the vessels come off to supply the brain and the arms and things, those are very complicated cases, and those are probably the most challenging.
Very interesting. Now, you know, many a doctor, many a surgeon on this program has extolled the virtues of robots and little tiny remote operated things. Are you using a lot of that?
We don't use robotics as much, but we do use a lot of technology because a lot of the procedures that we do are now what we call endovascular, which are meaning they're being done through small punctures to access an artery rather than through large incisions. So there's a lot of technology we have that are available to us, like grafts to fix aneurysms, all can go through, you know, tiny punctures in the arteries, and then also to fix occlusions in the legs and things like that. There's also can be done percutaneously using the technology that's available. Often I say to our residents, you know, we don't teach, you know, we used to teach surgery and procedures and things, and now what we teach is a lot of technology.
The outcomes are better?
Yes, and patients are out of the hospital quicker if they are amenable to those types of procedures. So you really have to kind of match the patient's presentation to what's going to be the best way to fix them.
Technology moves so quickly. And by the way, we're joined today by Dr. Paul Kreienberg. We're talking vascular surgery on Medical Monday. The number is 800-348-2551 if you want to call in. Technology moves so quickly in everything from TVs to toasters and everything else. You're about my age, although you clearly wear it much better than I do. What is the biggest when you went back to medical school, that was square one. Today is square five. Where are we? What is the biggest technological leap we have made?
At least from my standpoint, I think the most amazing thing is when I was in training, we were, you know, I was doing all open surgery. There was no endovascular work that we're doing. There was technology wasn't there. And then the technology evolved to fix abdominal aneurysms, which is the most common aneurysm that we see. And that's a procedure now that if it's, you know, the anatomy's right, can be done in about an hour and a half through two small punctures in the top of the legs, and the patients go home the next day. And when I was in training, we had to do them all through large incisions that we put in people's flanks and had to clamp above and below where the aneurysm is and hand sew a graft in. Patients were in the hospital 5 days to a week. And it was a much larger operation. And not only that, it was much more physically challenging for the surgeon as well. So that's become a huge difference. And now they have grafts where we can fix thoracic aneurysms, the abdominal aortic aneurysms. The devices are smaller, so the puncture sites are smaller. So it's really amazing stuff.
You don't have to answer this. I know I know sometimes it's sticky territory, but do hospitals discharge patients too early? 25 years ago, I had a burst appendix. I was in the hospital for 10 days. A relative of mine had quintuple bypass, and I think he was out in two or three.
There are big advantages to getting patients out of the hospital sooner because they don't get hospital-acquired infections. Most people do better at home. Our patients tend to be older, so if they're in more familiar surroundings, they don't get as much confusion and things from being in the hospital. The hospital is a very busy place at night. There's a lot of beeping and bells and lights and makes it very confusing for people. So the sooner you get people out safely and they've met all their needs, the better off it is for them.
We're joined today by Dr. Paul Kreienberg of Albany Medical Center. All right, the interrogation is over. Let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Thomas is in Waterford. Thomas, you're on. That's not a good start, Thomas.
Hello?
Hello, you're on.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I got a quick question. About a year ago, I ended up having a prostate biopsy, and I ended up getting sepsis from the biopsy. And after being in the hospital for 15 or 20 days, I developed something on my left lower leg that nobody could figure out what it was. One doctor said it was cellulitis. One doctor said it was lymphatic fluid building up down there. Another doctor I went to says it's collapsing blood vessels. And the last one just said it was something called status dermatitis. The back of my leg is black and blue. It burns. It hurts like hell. I'm wondering if that type of thing, if you can visualize it, would have something to do with a vascular problem.
Yeah.
My circulation is great. down there. I have no problems with blood flow other than what you look at.
Okay.
You would think that, Jesus, it's gangrene or something, but it's not.
Yeah, the only thing that, stasis dermatitis would be a brown patch that would be kind of firmer than the rest of the skin around it, but that tends to be circumferential, and that's just related to chronic venous insufficiency. So that wouldn't be an acute problem. The only other thing I could think of would be an acute thrombophlebitis, which would be just where a superficial vein in the leg thrombosis, and that gives you can give you a reddish or bluish appearance to a localized part of the leg.
Yeah, it's like a reddish blue. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, that's about all I could think of. And that doesn't, in and of itself, doesn't cause any problem. Usually we treat those just with warm compresses, elevation, and some nonsteroidals.
Thomas, thanks a lot for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Paul Kreinberg joins us from Albany Medical Center. Before we go to break, and we'll take a quick break here, our call screener, Joe Makowicz, has a great question. He typed it on my screen here. Are vascular surgeons involved in limb reattachments?
No, in general, limb reattachments are done by the plastic surgeons. So they do all the finger replants, and if they're doing a larger segment, they would be involved with that because they're trained. Usually that's done with microsurgical techniques. So they actually use a microscope when they do those procedures, and we're not trained in that part of the surgery.
Let's take a quick break here. Dr. Paul Kreinberg joins us. More of your calls coming up. 800-348-2551 is our number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be right back. It's a Medical Monday. Dr. Paul Kreinberg joins us to talk vascular surgery. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email the program. voxpop@wamc.org is our email address. Having fun so far, Doctor?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Okay. Well.
And it's a new experience for me, so it's fun.
I don't know how interesting. Well, you let me know at the end of the show if you found interesting or fun.
You can ask that question again in
30
minutes.
Fair enough. Jim and Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
Anything new in the way of shunts or stents for Mayfarner syndrome or iliac compression?
Yeah, one of the things that we're doing now, so Mayfarner is where the iliac vein gets compressed by the iliac artery as it crosses over in the pelvis. And what can happen then is in the left iliac vein, it gets compressed a little bit, so people get swelling in their left leg. And long-term, what can happen is then the vein can clot where that artery crosses over because it's too narrow and the blood flow is too slow. Then they develop a deep vein thrombosis in that leg. So one of the things when you do see patients with leg swelling, one of the things that we do is we do what's called a venogram where we put a catheter in the vein and then inject dye and look at the pictures. But then what we're also able to do is put in a catheter that has an ultrasound attached to it so we can actually do what's called intravascular ultrasound to see exactly where the narrowing is in the vein. And because sometimes with the venogram, you just see two dimensions, but the ultrasound lets us see three dimensions so we can see exactly where the problem is. And then we can place a stent where that narrowing is, and for your example of Mayfarner, or it could be from somebody who's had a DVT in the past, a deep vein thrombosis in the past, and has some narrowing related to that. And then we know where we can place a stent. And we can also use the ultrasound then to see how well we did when we put the stent in to fix it.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Our number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Paul Kreinberg joins us, and Lynn is in Shelburne Falls. Lynn.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
For about 20 years at least, and I'm 65 now or so, my ankles have been extremely tender to, put your hand on. And it feels like the nerves are just under the skin or there's veins under there that are, that aren't sticking out. Somebody mentioned it might be varicose veins, invisible varicose veins, but I was wondering if any suggestions from there.
Yeah, I mean, usually if it was a problem related to the varicose veins, usually most people don't have too many symptoms related to these unless there's some problem with the vein. Because a varicose vein is prone to thrombosis, that will give people pain or discomfort. In general, they don't cause too much in the way of pain. There would be some swelling involved. I don't know if your ankles are swollen at all, if that's going to be part of the problem that you have. But this sounds more like a neuropathic type thing than it does a vein problem.
Oh, Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks, Lynn. All right, a couple of definitions here. You say thrombosis.
So thrombosis is when the vein clots.
Right.
So that's with, like, thrombus, which is the clot that forms inside the vein, yeah.
Okay, very good. And what exactly is varicose veins?
Varicose veins are superficial veins in the legs that dilate over time. There can be several causes for that. I think if we all live long enough, we're all going to develop varicose veins. It's just from gravity and that problem. But what happens over, and it's most commonly seen in women who have had children, because during their pregnancy, the veins get larger, and then there's valves inside the vein. As the vein gets bigger, those valves can't close, and so it's basically a standing column of blood all through that superficial vein, and over time, it'll just dilate to dissipate the pressure, and that's why they develop the varicose veins. In other people, they can get it with the valvular dysfunction, and then the vein dilates over time, and then all the branches dilate, and that's what becomes varicose.
But it's not really anything terribly to worry about?
No. Usually, the initial management is going to be compression stockings.
Yeah.
If it can't, that doesn't manage the problem well enough for the patient, then there's other tests we can do to look into seeing what the cause of the problem is. We can do ultrasounds to look for reflux in the vein to see if the blood's falling the wrong direction. If that's the case, then we do procedures that are called vein ablations, where we basically put a catheter inside the vein and there's laser energy that photoablates the vein, so it just occludes it, and then the blood can't fall down anymore, and then the varicosities can't fill.
Now, you've talked about thrombosis, aneurysms. What's an embolism?
Embolism is where a clot or a segment of clot breaks off from somewhere and travels out in the arterial tree. So the most common place we see that is in patients who have atrial fibrillation, because they'll develop clot inside the heart. And then on occasion, a piece of that clot will break off and end up in the leg, or it can end up into one of the arteries to the vital organs. And then depending on where it ends up, the symptoms they get. So if you see a patient that has acute onset of leg pain and someone who has normal arteries and has atrial fibrillation, then we think of an embolus.
And they could be deadly.
They can be if they travel, because they can travel to the brain, and that can cause stroke, and that can often be a fatal event.
Dr. Paul Kreienberg joins us from Albany Medical Center. The number to call is 800-348-2551 if you have a question about vascular surgery today. And let's go to lovely Utica, New York. Gina, you're on.
Yes. I was recently diagnosed with PVCs, premature ventricular contractions. My heart muscle is strong. The ejection fraction is good. They're concerned about some kind of possibility. They want to test for possible blockages in the vascular system or in the arteries. Can you kind of advise how they would diagnose that problem? And the other question is, if contrast dye is necessary, since I have allergies to things such as that.
Yeah, I'm not a cardiologist. But if they are looking for blockages, I would imagine it would be looking at your coronary arteries, which would be a cardiac catheterization, and that does require contrast. I don't know what your contrast allergy is. We do contrast studies on people who do have contrast allergies, and we pre-medicate them with things like Benadryl, which is antihistamine, and then steroids, which
right.
also helps obviate some of the complications related to the contrast allergy. It depends
okay.
on what... It depends on what
I happen to know that at the hospitals in Syracuse, and I think one through the Mayo Clinic, that with a person with severe allergies, that they did do the catheterization without contrast dye.
Yeah, we do, at least, and I can't speak to the, because I don't do cardiac catheterization. I know in the lower extremities, we can use carbon dioxide gas as the contrast agent, and that obviates, you know, giving people contrast that have a severe allergy.
Okay, Gina, thanks a lot for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Paul Kreienberg joins us on this Medical Monday. And a few emails here that have come in since we got rolling.
Okay.
And this one's from Tom. Tom says, is there an age when one should have imaging screening for aortic or jugular narrowing?
So at least, not in terms of narrowing, but for any male that's ever smoked, you can get screened for aortic aneurysm. And that usually is done at your Welcome to Medicare physical at age 65. And that's really the only time that they allow you to screen for aortic aneurysms.
Okay.
It's just in men who have ever smoked at all. I'm not sure. I don't know any data for screening for jugular vein narrowing or for aortic narrowing, because that, if you did have a narrowing in your aorta, you should be able to just pick that up on a physical examination by the pulse exam. So you wouldn't need any specific screening for that.
Mm. This email from Jan, it's a rather long email, but I hope we have time for it. We only have half an hour left. Jan writes, I had a sore calf for 3 months, participated in intense exercise daily, but my leg was hard fiber feeling and painful. Thought it could be a muscle issue. Saw ortho, then referred to cardiologist, ultrasound, or duplex exam of veins. One interpreter said it was a deep vein, started on Eliquis. My calf vein issue softened, improved eventually. To investigate further, saw a different vein specialist. This MD said not a deep vein that was involved in that leg. No need to stay on Eliquis. Aspirin as needed, so I take baby aspirin daily. I want to say I still get some leg pain, sometimes as high as behind my knee. Not much swelling, but occasionally a bit. Legs can be sore. I still exercise, yet less vigorously. I'm temperature sensitive and can't wear compression socks in summer. Legs feel more heavy. What symptom in my legs would be more emergent or something to go to see my vein specialist? Take it from here. Yeah, I'm going to take a break. Go ahead.
It's hard to tell exactly what you have going on. It sounds like it. You may have had what's called a tibial vein thrombosis, which is one of the smaller veins in the leg, but it is a deep vein. And people treat those on different ways. You were basically treated with kind of maximal therapy by being put on anticoagulation. And usually we would do that just for a short while if we were going to treat somebody in that way, usually for about 3 months. Even after that goes away, though, you may still have some symptoms in the leg. And actually, light compression would definitely help. You don't need to be in a real tight compression stocking, but even 10 to 20 millimeters of mercury, which is a light compression, most people can tolerate that. It's like a tight dress sock.
Yeah. This one is from Karen. With all the technology that we have today and the work that we do on hearts, how come we have not come up with a solution to fix varicose veins?
There's nothing we can do preventatively for this. I think once people develop varicose veins, one of the things that you can do is to prevent more from forming is to wear the compression stocking.
Okay.
Because that keeps the veins compressed so they don't dilate, so they don't grow. And so that's probably the biggest thing that people can do once they develop them.
But this is not an indication of some deeper problem holistically elsewhere
No.
in the vascular system?
No. This is just something that comes with age. It's one of those things that, like I said, if we all live long enough, we'll all develop varicose veins.
Fair enough. This last email, and then we'll jump back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. It might be a typo here. Maybe it's a medical term. Eileen says, what is the best comedic treatment for spider and varicose veins?
Oh, cosmetic.
Oh, okay. It's not comedic because I'd say Phyllis Diller.
I would guess cosmetic.
Tony Fields.
So the best way to treat spider veins or one of the ways to treat them is with sclerotherapy. And that's where we take a very tiny needle and place it inside the spider vein. And then we usually inject a solution like hypertonic saline. And what that does is causes the vein to sclerose and disappear. So it doesn't completely leave the skin looking completely normal. There may be just a little bit of discoloration, but the bluishness of the spider vein then goes away.
Mm.
If the veins are smaller than, you know, the spider vein, those would be treated with a laser, and that's usually done by dermatologists or plastic surgeons.
Paul Kreienberg, Dr. Paul Kreienberg, joins us today. The number is 800-348-2551. Patty is in East Brookfield, Massachusetts. Patty, you're up.
Okay. I'm wondering what, I don't know how to say the word, but it's because I have plaque on my aorta, if I'm saying that right.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
And how do you treat that? They said that it might be an aneurysm there, too.
Well, that's almost two different things, because when people say plaque in the aorta, you're talking about a narrowing in the aorta. And if you're talking about aneurysms,
they said I had a lot of plaque on my...
Okay. Yeah, the treatment for the plaque would just be kind of medical treatment as long as you're not having any symptoms related to the narrowing. So if you had symptoms related to the narrowing, it would be an ulcer that wouldn't heal on your foot or pain in your legs when you walk or something like that. If you're completely asymptomatic, then it would just be medical treatment, which would be antiplatelet agents and then making sure your cholesterol was in check, making sure your blood pressure was under good control.
Okay, Patty?
Okay.
Okay, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's a Medical Monday with Dr. Paul Kreienberg of Albany Medical Center. Mary in Saratoga. Mary, you're on.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Did you say Mary?
I did. Hello, Mary.
Oh, hiya there. I was so afraid I missed you. I ran down and grabbed my mail, and I hope the doctor didn't have to answer this question already. I'm 91, and I've had clogged carotid arteries 50% for a few years, but I haven't seen my cardiologist in over a year. But I don't know, are there any symptoms, or could a, God forbid, a stroke occur?
Well, so the, you know, that's one of the things when people do have plaque that builds up in their carotids, that's one of the things that you worry about, a stroke or transient ischemic attack. When we see patients in the office that have plaques that are, you know, under 70 to 80%, say 50%, we generally follow those patients with ultrasounds, usually once a year. And then if people do progress, even on medical treatment, sometimes that happens, then sometimes we recommend surgery to clean out the artery. Otherwise, we would just continue to follow it, even if they're, you know, when they're asymptomatic.
Okay. Well, thank you. Okay.
Thanks, Mary. Now, just a quick aside. You've called in on Food Friday before, right? It's been a while.
Yeah, a long while. Yeah, I was cooking when I called you.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm doing it now.
God
I'm just
bless
making
you.
Some mushroom tomato sauce. Should I run over to the station?
Frankly, Dr. Kreienberg looks hungry.
That
so
sounds great.
Hey, thanks a lot, Mary. We'll talk to you soon. 800-348-2551 is our number. Elizabeth in Albany. Elizabeth, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi.
I do have spiderweb veins on just one leg, my right leg, and I did have sclerotherapy a few years ago that didn't do anything at all. I don't know if it's a timing or you have to follow up with the treatment with the compression stockings for weeks or days afterwards, but it didn't do anything, and in some areas it made it worse. And I, for my own, for me, it's a cosmetic issue because it's very, very ugly. And I did hear the former, your answer to the previous mm-hmm. caller. But if it didn't take the first time, what is my resources for a second time or another treatment?
Well, you, they can
in still, just one leg, just one thigh.
Yeah, they still can be treated with sclerotherapy. And it's, you know, it's often not 100%. And sometimes we can't treat all the spider veins at one sitting. Sometimes they do require several sittings, depending on how large they are and where they are in the limb and things. But that you can definitely be treated again. You're not limited by anything.
And is a follow-up weeks or multiple days of wearing the
usually like to see people
compression
in compression after
full leg?
Yep.
Full leg?
Yeah, to cover the area that was treated, yes.
Because full leg is, right, almost like you have to do it in the fall or the winter to cover your summer
that often
activities.
Often people will say that because the thigh-high stockings are difficult to manage.
Yes.
But they are the best
thing. But that's
best just
about the only way to deal with the spider veins on a woman's
yeah.
thigh.
Hmm? Yeah, and like I said, it depends on how big they are, whether they can be treated with a laser or not. If they're smaller than the spider veins, sometimes the lasers can work.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Elizabeth. We'll take a quick break here. Dr. Paul Kreienberg joins us from Albany Med, and we'll be back with more of your vascular surgery questions in a moment. Thad Jones for you on trumpet there. It's Vox Pop on WAMC Medical Monday with Ray Graff, and we're joined today by Dr. Paul Kreienberg of Albany Medical Center. Dr. Kreienberg is a vascular surgeon. Mike in Rexford writes, I have heard that abdominal aortic aneurysms are now less common and generally smaller than they were 20 to 30 years ago. People just aren't showing up with really large aneurysms anymore. To what can we attribute this improvement? Is it screening, better control of hypertension, the introduction of statins, all of the above? And that's from Mike in Rexford.
Yeah, the Society for Vascular Surgery has guidelines on when aneurysm should be fixed. And I mean, the normal aorta is about 2.5 centimeters. The size that we fix the aneurysms at are at about 5.5 centimeters.
That's pretty sizable.
Yeah, so we used to fix smaller aneurysms. And I think what's happened is with the advent of the endovascular treatments, a lot of the aneurysms are getting treated sooner. But our guidelines still say at 5.5 is when they should be fixed. And I don't think it's that aneurysms are smaller than they used to be. I just think we do a better job of looking for them and fixing them when they do get to the size that they need to be fixed.
What about statins?
Statins are not directly in terms of have an effect on aneurysms themselves.
Yeah.
What the statins are good for is, well, for one, reducing risk of heart attack and stroke, but also reducing the progression of atherosclerotic plaque in the peripheral arteries, which cause occlusions more than aneurysms. So it prevents some of the problems related to that.
You know, one of those terms you hear when you're young and you have grandparents, and my grandmother was an old German lady, and she's like, oh, so-and-so had hardening of the arteries. That's a real thing, right?
Yes. So that's, you know, hardening of the arteries, atherosclerotic plaque, atherosclerosis, all those are talking about the same thing. And when we talk about occlusive problems in the legs, that's what we're talking about, is the buildup of the plaque in those arteries. And one of the things you have to understand is atherosclerosis is a systemic problem. So if you look at patients who have plaque in their legs, there's a good chance that they have plaque in their carotid arteries and also in their heart. So often patients have to be screened for those other things once they're identified with one of those other problems.
You know, when you go to the dentist, they remove plaque. And why can't you just go in there and remove the plaque and soften up the arteries?
So we do that. Some surgeries we do exactly that. When we clean out carotid arteries, we're actually it's called an endarterectomy. But actually what we're doing is opening the artery, cleaning out the plaque, like cleaning out the gunk that builds up inside a pipe, and then we close the outside of the pipe back up, and we've actually removed that plaque. And that's because the blood flow in the carotid artery is so high, so that the risk of clotting is smaller. When we work on smaller arteries, you can't do that. So that's when we do bypasses and things to put a vein in place of the artery, because that doesn't have any plaque in it. You don't leave that raw surface.
Right. Dr. Paul Kreienberg joins us on Vox Pop Medical Monday. Let's go back to the phones here at 800-348-2551. Alan in New Paltz. Alan, you're on.
Yes, hi. I have a question about the longevity of stents. So about 20 years ago, I had a stent in my kidney artery. It was discovered the artery was, I think, 99% blocked, and my blood pressure was very high. So a vascular surgeon put in a stent. So do these stents stay 100% effective throughout the years, or do they gradually get clogged? You know, do you have to maintain or do anything with them, or are they just as good that, you know, from the day you put them in?
Yeah, we use stents in many different parts of the body, coronary arteries, in your case, the renal arteries. We use them in the lower legs. But one of the things is anywhere you put a stent in, your body's reaction to that is to form kind of a scar that is the body's reaction to having that stent placed inside that artery. So it's different than the original atherosclerotic plaque you had. It's more of a smooth scar kind that forms inside the stent, will eventually over time may narrow the artery. And that's why when, you know, we do renal stents or stents in the lower leg, we do ultrasounds to see if they're re-narrowing. And then there's sometimes what we can do is re-intervene on them, either re-balloon them to kind of open them back up. In the legs, we use devices to clean out some of the scar and then re-balloon them, because this is a process the body's just going to do once that stent goes in.
So an ultrasound could check if this is functioning effectively today.
Absolutely. For your situation, would either be a CAT scan angiogram, a regular contrast angiogram, which would be the most invasive thing, or just do an ultrasound to start with.
Got it. Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Alan, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Medical Monday, Vascular Surgery Today with Dr. Paul Kreienberg of Albany Medical Center and Albany Medical College. Cecilia in Niskayuna. Cecilia.
Hi. Excuse me. Sure. I had my vein stripped about 20 years ago when I was about 50. And they've come back, and basically from the knee up to the groin. And I wanted to know if there's a new procedure where they use the laser rather than stripping.
Yeah, so just so everybody knows, what stripping is the way we used to remove the saphenous vein, which is the vein that causes the reflux and the varicosities. Stripping would be you'd make an incision at the top, right at the top of the leg, and then one at the ankle. And then we had a device that would pass up inside the vein, and they actually just pull it through and basically strip the whole vein out, which was it's a relatively brutal procedure, but it does solve the problem.
What do you mean brutal?
It's basically the patients get really a lot of bruising in the leg.
Ah, okay.
So the newer way to do it is with a laser, which is what you were talking about, is where we do a small puncture in the vein, usually around the knee. The laser catheter goes up inside the vein. We turn the laser on, pull the catheter down, and basically causes, just with heat energy, causes the vein to occlude, and then it removes the source of the reflux so the varicosities don't fill. Since you've already been stripped, most likely you're not a candidate to have any type of laser procedure performed. But if you do have large varicosities still in the leg, then the treatment for those would be what's called a stab phlebectomy, where we make tiny incisions along the vein and basically with a clamp remove the vein from underneath the skin. And then we just put a pressure dressing on your leg and that takes care of it.
Huh.
Yes, my other question is with the compression stockings. I've heard there's a new type with a zipper.
So,
would that be as good?
The zipper ones really are hard to find now. There is a new device, which is a wrap, which basically has a Velcro type thing that basically is the closure for it. And you buy, you know, a foot segment, calf segment, and a thigh segment if you want that. They're a little easier to get on, provide the same amount of compression. They're a little bit more bulky than a stocking, but they're much easier to get on.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your information.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Cecilia. We appreciate the call. 800-348-2551. So, again, we've had a lot of calls about varicose veins. And no, this is a mystery.
Very common problem.
This is a mystery to me. But is it a health problem or is this just a cosmetic problem?
Some it's cosmetic, but people can get symptoms related to this, which is like the leg swelling. And then people get what's kind of a bursting type pain related to the swelling that they get that's directly related to the varicosities. So if you can remove the source of that swelling, they don't get that kind of bursting pain that you get with the leg swelling related to the varicosities.
Gotcha. The number here is 800-348-2551. Catherine in Schenectady. Catherine, you're on.
Hi. My question may not be answerable from Dr. Paul. I have an issue down on the inside of my leg, right above my ankle, and it's discoloration that will be very tender and sometimes throbs. And I've had a smaller incident about the size of my hand up on the calf. I asked my doctor, and I said I was concerned it was varicose vein. So we did have an ultrasound. They said there was none there. And every doctor I've seen since just says, it's nothing, don't worry about it. Could there be something to do with my vascular system that would be doing this?
Well, what's the discoloration that you get? Is it brownish or is it bluish?
Yeah, it's brownish.
Brownish, yeah. I mean, old phlebitis can look like this, which is where you've had a vein underneath the skin that's clotted, okay? And usually people get an acute pain with that, and then it kind of dissipates over time, but it will leave you with one area that may be discolored and firm in that part of the leg where the vein clotted.
Should she be worried?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing to worry about. It's all, if it's all superficial, there's nothing to worry about.
All right, so I guess every doctor I've talked to, they're right. They just said, I can't tell you what it is, but it's nothing. Don't worry about it.
Now, remember, we got a caveat
sometimes
here. You know, he really can't diagnose over the phone, so he's doing the best
right.
he can here, you know.
No, I understand that. It's an inconvenience more than a lot of pain, but there are times where that area just throbs, and it's a little bit of a burning pain, but...
Hmm. Yeah, usually people get that.
So I don't know what doctor I need to go back to.
People get the pain in more in the acute phase of that, and it takes like 3 months for the acute phlebitis to dissipate.
Okay, so maybe it'll be over soon, Catherine. Thank you for the call. 800-348-2551. Matt in Clifton Park. Matt, you're on.
Hi, doctor. I was...
Uh-oh. We lost Matt. Hello, Matt. Matt, your connection's terrible, sir. Can you turn 45 degrees? Hello, you're on. Oh, boy. Matt waited a while, too. We'll give him a second.
Variceal, what it is, what the treatment is, when treatment is warranted, and what the recovery is like.
So a varicocele?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so it depends on your age and things and your symptoms. So varicocele is where it's the veins that drain the testicle basically become varicose. And the vein that drains the testicle drains into the renal veins. And often if the valves don't work in that, the blood will reflux and they'll get the varicocele. Now, in young men, it becomes a problem because they become sterile from this and the testes doesn't work. And so they're treated sometimes in different ways. One is to, you can surgically clip the vein and then that gets rid of the reflux, or through an interventional procedure where you put a catheter inside the vein, you can actually put embolic coils inside the vein through a catheter that basically plugs up that vein so the blood doesn't reflux anymore.
Wow. All right, Matt, well, your connection was not good, sir, but thank you very much. We got the gist. 800-348-2551 is our number. Don at Canada Lake. Don, you're on.
Yes, hi, doctor. I've had a number of friends who've had bypass surgery, triple, quadruple, and the doctors apparently have always mentioned very high calcium levels. My cardiologist never mentions that. And I was just wondering if there is a what is the connection? Apparently, there is a strong connection between calcium and heart disease and vascular disease. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things here. One, that, you know, your calcium level would be like your blood level of calcium. That's not related to your heart disease. What you're thinking of or talking about, I think, is the calcium score, which is a test that cardiologists do, where you put a patient in a CAT scanner without any contrast or anything, and you look and see if there's any calcification in the blood vessels in the heart. And then they have a scoring, way to score that. And in general, the more calcium you have in your heart, the higher your calcium score, the more likely you're to have narrowings in your coronary arteries. And so they use it as they use it as a screening test to see whether patients who have more invasive test to work up their heart disease.
And if you are somebody with who's taking statins and has partial blockage in the carotid, is that something that should be done occasionally to
a calcium score? No, but you should have, if you do have a narrowing in the carotid, usually depending on your presentation and age, we usually re-ultrasound people at either 6 month or yearly intervals just to monitor the plaque in the carotids.
Yes. Okay. Okay. What is a normal score?
Zero.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Zero. Normal would be no calcium in your coronary arteries.
So you don't roll a 300 like in bowling. That's not a good idea.
No, you don't
want
to roll a 300.
All right. Thank you very much. Tom in Stockbridge. Tom, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Are you? Do you hear me?
Yes, we do. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. I'm 85 years old. I have AFib, and it's not bad. And about 15 to 20 years ago, I hit the side of my leg about three quarters of the way up my shin on a low table. At first, of course, it was hurting a lot. I don't think I broke anything. I didn't go to the doctor. And pretty much it's gone away, except that if I touch it, not just a little bit, but if I push a little bit on my leg, I have pain on the surface of my leg. And I was surprised because I would have expected to have pain closer to the bone. There doesn't seem to be any discoloration or any swelling. And I'm just wondering whether I should be at all concerned.
This is from an injury you had 15 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't even begin to think of where to answer that one. Because it's, I don't know what it could be. My recommendation, if you really want to get it checked out, you'd have to see either an orthopod would probably be the best person to see and get the imaging done to your lower leg.
Okay. All right. Good enough.
All right.
Tom, thank you very much. We have time for one or two more here before we wrap up with Dr. Paul Kreienberg. Jim in Lake Katrine. Jim, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm 90 years old. I'm mobile. I drive my car, do my shopping, no problem. I look 30 years younger than I am, I'm told.
Ah.
But I have diabetes, I have an aortic aneurysm, and I have AFib. My left leg is red due to poor circulation, almost to my knee, and my right leg is red as well, halfway to my knee. And I'm wondering what I can do about that.
Well, do you have pain in the legs or anything, or pain when you walk in the calves?
No pain at all, no, sir.
No pain at all. Yeah, so, you know, it, and I, you know, obviously I can't examine you over the phone, but it's, you know, one of the things that I tell people is in the office is, you know, the coloration of the limb I don't worry about too much as long as the testing that I've done shows that your circulation is normal. So everybody's skin color and tone is a little bit different. It changes with emotional state, ambient temperature, the position of the leg. So I don't put a lot of emphasis on it as long as you don't have any other symptoms related to a circulatory problem.
Okay, but I have no feeling in my feet.
Oh, yeah, that's related to your diabetes, most likely. That's related to your diabetes. Well, that often long-term diabetics can develop what's called diabetic neuropathy, and it presents in different ways.
Yes,
some people get numbness. Some people get burning and tingling. But if it involves both both feet in a kind of a stocking distribution, that's very common for diabetic neuropathy.
Yeah. Should I wear compression socks?
Sometimes people will find that that's helpful, so they make compression socks for diabetics, which is basically just a low-grade compression hose, and sometimes that gives people symptomatic relief.
Hey, Jim, we got to run here, but thank you for the call. Dr. Paul Kreienberg, you're done. You did very well, sir.
Thank you very much. It's great being here.
Well, I hope you come back, and we learned a lot today, and there's much more to learn, so I hope you come back soon.
Thank you.
Support comes from Villa Veritas Foundation, Kerhonkson, New York, helping fight the epidemic opiate crisis both locally and throughout the country with specialized programs, education, and support for men, women, and families. VillaVeritas.org for inquiries. Once again, thanks to Dr. Paul Kreienberg for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Tremendous calls, tremendous emails, and, you know, if you didn't make it through, my heartfelt apology to you. We'll do this topic again soon. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Joe Makowitz, who is our Medical Monday screener and does a fine job over there. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Birds with Rich Guthrie. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for the Media Project.